Well, yeah, that's been so much fun, I kind of hate to let it go. So I want him to feel very loved tonight is what I'm really... I want him to go away knowing that he is loved or thought about or something like that. So it's been what? It's been 3 or 4 weeks since we've been together on Sunday night. I don't remember what I had for dinner last night, so I'm not sure how many weeks ago it was that we met and how many we didn't. But I think there were some holidays and some craziness that went on between then. So we're going to do a little backtracking. And this is either a blessing or a challenge for you to be here tonight because of that. We left our discussion, the Lord's Supper in Acts. And we had a conversation about Acts 2:42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread. This is that fantastic moment in the early life of the church where everybody goes to Jerusalem for Pentecost, and they all expected to be there for a day or two, and the Messiah came and everything, the Holy Spirit came, and the church began, and Peter preached that sermon and all. Well, everything changed, and so everybody's kind of just camping out. They're hanging out, and that's when they were sold their property, and those who had property, and distributed it so that nobody had need. So there was this just moment of just communal fellowship from people all over the country who thought they were coming to Jerusalem for one thing and wound up being something totally different, and it was just a very exciting moment in the church. But the case has been made by some, and this is not new, is that this breaking bread is language that depicts the communion where Jesus serves as host. And we looked at several meals in the book of Acts, or in the book of Luke, I'm sorry, to introduce this. So first of all, I'm going to offer you a chance for some rebuttal or to offer your comments. I know it's been 3 or 4 weeks, and I'm not even sure what I said the last time we got together on Sunday night, so if you don't remember what I said, that's fine too. But I want to give you a chance to give some thoughts. If you remember that, if it made an impression, if there was something that interested you or concerned you or you thought was unusual, what I suggested was this breaking bread is Luke's code speak for communion. And so the early church in Acts 2 devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, and to communion, I can say, and to prayer. Your chance to speak up now. you'll let me know. What my goal is to try to defend this. It's different. It's an unusual reading. It's not one that I'm accustomed to, but I wouldn't be bringing it to you if I didn't think it was defensible and if I didn't think it had some weight to it. But I do want to know what your thoughts are and to help me kind of know which direction I'm going to go. If you have thoughts, don't make up something out of thin air just because. Anybody have any thoughts on that? Any comments? How can we be sure it's not just a common meal? Yeah. Right? Great question. I'm not sure we can be absolutely positive. I'll make the case, and then you can decide what you think. There are... I remember in preaching school, I was told, first of all, if you ever think you have a unique thought, be careful, because there have been a lot smarter people that came a lot long before you got here. And so if you think you've discovered something new and different, and this, by the way, is not a new discovery I'm trying to bring out. This is a discussion that's going on for a long time. But my goal is to make the best case I can make and then let you decide what you think of it. So I'll say this much. There is no 100% certainty, because I'm going to quote respected minds of past who come down on both sides of the issue. I think there's some legs to this, or I wouldn't be spending our time on it, but this is not the hill I'm going to die on, if that makes sense. Is that okay with you? Yeah, I'm going to try to make the best case. I do think there's legs. I think there's some weight to this, and I think if it's true, if it's accurate, that that's communion, then it gives us it gives us some insight. So can't be absolutely certain. Try to make a case. I'm going to make the best case I can for both. Make the best case I can for it is. Make the best case I can for it isn't. And then let you decide. What's the significance of breaking bread? Yeah, okay. Which is fellowship, right? Yeah, it's fellowship. Now, and clearly there was an enormous amount of just, can you imagine what that must have been like? You come to Jerusalem thinking you're going to sacrifice some animals and celebrate a Jewish feast, and Peter and the apostles get up and preach in your language, in your home tongue, and the Holy Spirit comes down like tongues of fire, and there's 3,000 people baptized, and the next day all 3,000 of you get together. I mean, it's just it had to have been just an amazing, just a heady moment, just a crazy, wonderful moment. So there was tons of just great fellowship, and I have to believe that there was just a buzz and energy and excitement, because if this is real, this is the Messiah that your parents have been waiting for, your grandparents, your great grandparents, your great greats. I mean, this is the one everybody's been waiting on, and you're at the epicenter. I mean, it's just the energy there must have just been palatable. Yeah. Okay. So absolutely. At the very least, it's a strong word. It's a strong definition of fellowship. Can we go with that? Anybody else? Whatever it was, 2 or 3, 4 weeks, whenever it was last time, at the immediate end of class after I said this, one of our dear members who was simply speaking their mind said, "I don't like this," and I think the discomfort was it wasn't on Sunday. It wasn't specifically and only on Sunday. It was something as often as they came. I mean, it was regularly, and so we kind of. And I'm sympathetic to the fact that something that is unique and different, that's not crossed our paths before, I'm the same way. My first reaction is this is change. What? So to look at it a different way can be very uncomfortable, and I'm sympathetic to that. Anybody else? When you're serving
papers.
Papers. When law enforcement comes to your desk. When you're getting served, you don't break bread.
And the nature of the community back then, if strangers came into town, you had to provide food and shelter.
There was an expectation of hospitality. Yes. Absolutely, yeah.
And so how much more welcome can breaking bread introduce an atmosphere?
Yeah.
Sharing, does that not exemplify what Christ did when he abolished the old law that was labored and bound by laws and strict adherences and stuff? And that now partaking of the Lord's Supper is open to anybody who has made that commitment.
Yes, yeah. Appropriate attitude. Yeah. So we move from a closed system in the Old Testament, whether it wasn't God's design for it to be a closed system, but the Israelites made it a closed system, to this wide open, just kicking the doors wide open. You know, just come on in, and then they take this Pharisee named Saul of Tarsus and say, "You're going to be my apostle to the Gentiles," and which is a crazy mix-up. What a mix-up. God knew what he was doing, but it was a crazy matchup to give a Pharisee the job of evangelizing the Gentiles and to the one who's persecuting the church to be the one who's the evangelist for the church. But that's how God works. So yeah, we have this great openness here. Let me by way of just a review, just quickly go over what we talked about, kind of lay some groundwork to this. Here's three examples in the book of Luke which describe for us communion. It's where Jesus serves as the host. I'm going to put it that way. There's three meals where Jesus serves as the host. The first is feeding the 5,000 in Luke chapter 9, verse 16. And so we have, and notice the language, take, blessed, broke, gave. Take, blessed, broke, gave. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, looking up to heaven, he gave thanks, he blessed, and he broke, and then he gave them to the disciples to set before the people. So took, blessed, broke, gave. And this is where we learn that Jesus is a Savior like Moses, right? I'm the bread of life. And then in Luke chapter 22, the Last Supper, there's very similar language. And he took bread, gave thanks. He took, blessed, broke, gave, saying, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. This is where we learn Jesus is our Passover lamb. He's the Lord's Supper, is the Passover celebration. And then in Luke 2:24, verse 30, the two men on the road to Emmaus, which to me is fascinating. It's the two men on the road to Emmaus, and he goes to their house, either their shared house or one of their homes. And again, he is the host. When he was at the table, Jesus, Jesus took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. So what a fascinating, you talk about the expectation of a hospitality, which is very true. Imagine inviting somebody in your house, and the next thing you know, they're sitting at the head of the table acting like the host. And that's exactly what Jesus does. He took the bread, he blessed the bread, he broke the bread and gave it to them. And so this is where we learn that Christ is revealed in the breaking of the bread. You remember as soon as he did that, they said, you know, oh, weren't our hearts burning in this when he was talking to us on the road? There was something going on. Now we know what it was. He's the Messiah. And what's interesting is that on that night, it was getting late enough that it wasn't safe for Jesus to continue, but they didn't care. They bolted and they went right back to Jerusalem to talk about the good news. So here's three examples of took, blessed, broke, gave, where Jesus serves as the host. And so Luke uses this same formula for some important occasions, this took, blessed, broke, gave. And so the suggestion is this appears to be Luke's formula for meals where Jesus serves as the host, because he doesn't use this when other people are hosts. Matthew and Mark, by the way, don't use the same language. They don't have this language. They don't use the exact same language anyway, this formula. And so this is the case. Luke is using a formula that is unique to Luke, and he uses it in Luke and in Acts. Acts 2:42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. So Luke gives us a snapshot. Oh, there's more. There's two lines. Okay, selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. There's another example here. And ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all people, and the Lord added to their number daily those who are being saved. So this kind of goes back to what Todd was talking about with hospitality. So we get this snapshot of life in the early church, this rare moment when this very communal moment, when people from all over gather together, when the gospel breaks out, when the church comes to life. By the time we're in Acts 2, by the time we get to Acts 8, that moment's gone for good. The church is persecuted and scattered. Everybody goes back to their home. And that communal moment that they had in those first few chapters is gone. But the focus of the church was caring for one another, as Todd mentioned, fellowship. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to breaking of bread, and to prayer. And the claim is that that 2:42, the breaking of bread, is shorthand for took, blessed, broke, gave in Luke. So Luke educates his readers, took, blessed, broke, gave, as a meal when Jesus serves as the host. And now he gives us, in the book of Acts, shorthand for that. So I was talking about this after the last time we were here, and Shelley and I and Randy were back in the back talking, and Shelley goes, that's a synecdoche. I said, what? That's a synecdoche. And I hate to admit this. I had zero recollection whatsoever. Like I said, I don't remember what I had for dinner last night. So we got to talking about it, and I kept trying to repeat it. And Shelley was being gracious about it. I wasn't saying it correctly. And so Randy finally just stopped. Look, I just got to stop right here. So just Randy just stopped the whole conversation and just zoned in on me and said, you're going to work on this till you pronounce it correctly. So he just kind of walked in. He goes, no, try it again. It's synecdoche. And so I've got the pronunciation guide up there, synecdoche. And I got to tell you, and this is not a compliment to me either, I got to thinking, goodness gracious, how did I get through preaching school and we don't talk about synecdoche? And I thought I had a pretty good education. Either I've just totally blipped that out of my mind or what. And I'm ashamed to say what I did. But if you look at the very the spelling of it at the top on the right line, right-hand side of the top line. Evidently, what I did was I decided that it entertained me to mispronounce it. It entertained me to come up with my own pronunciation, and I hesitate to give you what the pronunciation is. I don't want to put it in your head, but I have had that. As soon as I saw the word, I go, oh, I know what that is, and I mispronounced it. And so then I thought, oh, I can't let Randy be right. I can't let that. So I had to go look for every pronunciation guy I could find to find one to support me. And it wasn't there. And so unfortunately, Randy's right again. Synecdoche is the proper pronunciation. And I cannot find a pronunciation guide that gives me credibility for mine. So evidently, in preaching school, I found a wonky way to pronounce it that just entertained me and lost connection with the proper pronunciation of the word. I recognized it when I saw it. So here's the definition of a synecdoche. A reference to a part that describes the whole. A reference to a part that describes the whole. So we'll do it this way. If I came to you and said, you know, Jan and I had lunch at, I don't know, pick a spot, and we walked in there and we thought it was a casual place. We were kind of dressed casual, walked in there, and all we saw were a bunch of suits. What would you think we saw when I said all we saw was a bunch of suits? People dressed in suits, probably business people. There was a restaurant. There was a hamburger joint on the around the square in Denton, Texas, around the courthouse square in Denton, Texas, right next door to a lawyer's office, right across the street from the courthouse. And you go into the hamburger joint, and you're expecting to have a relaxed atmosphere and all that. And there's a bunch of suits in there, a bunch of lawyers, a bunch of suits. So this is a synecdoche. This is where we talk about suits, and you know I'm talking about more than suits. I'm talking about people dressed in business attire, right? If I walked in here tonight and I said, man, you got to come out in the parking lot. I know it's cold, but I got a new set of wheels. Now, I could be talking about, you know, three or four wheels or whatever sitting in the back of my truck, but what else might I be referring to? A new car. Or if I got a new pair of wheels, be a motorcycle. And then you'd have to really wonder about my sanity riding a motorcycle up here and weather like tonight, right? But you would understand very quickly that if you walk out there and you don't see my truck and I walk you to a new car, that I was talking about a set of wheels referring to the entire vehicle. That's a synecdoche, a part of the something that refers to the whole. The one that resonates with me most is, and some of us are old enough to remember, Storming Norman Schwarzkopf. You remember Storming Norman that would come every night during the Gulf War? You remember Storming Norman? And he would give his brief, he'd give his review of the day. And I remember one in particular where he talked about the luckiest guy in Baghdad. You remember that one? There was a picture of a missile heading to take out a bridge so they could stop the retreat of the Iraqi army and they could finish him off. And so you're looking through the laser-guided lens of this missile headed toward the bridge. And as it gets closer and closer and closer, a white SUV just drives right through the crosshairs and goes on the other side. He goes, there's the luckiest guy in Baghdad. And then he goes, and in his rearview mirror, and poof, the bridge blows up. So imagine Storming Norman is giving his nightly review of what's going on in the war. And he says, we have 3,000 boots on the ground. What's he talking about? Soldiers, right? Part of something referring to the whole, a synecdoche, right? So there's a quick review of synecdoche, or as I pronounce it, something totally different. And it is so hard for me. Bad habits are hard to break. Good habits are hard to keep, right? So the Bible is chocked full of synecdoches. And we are so familiar with them that we pass through without even thinking about it. It doesn't even register for us. Psalm 1:1. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. Is it just men? Is it okay for women to walk in the counsel of the wicked? Or is that a synecdoche?
It's mankind.
It's mankind. It's humanity. It's part of something referring to the whole. And we don't even think about it. So when we see man, we're just like, oh yeah. We know that means men and women, right? The Bible's chock full of them like this. And we see them so often we don't even think about it. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers and authorities and the rulers. And well, when's the last time you struggled against a piece of flesh or a puddle of blood? I'm not talking about turkey for Thanksgiving. What is that flesh and blood referring to?
Mortal people.
Yeah, mortal people. It's a synecdoche. It's part of something referring to the whole. So he's talking about flesh and blood. That tells us that's mortal people. We don't even have to do the math in our head. It's familiar to us, right? It just, I know what that means. Our struggle isn't against people. It's against the powers in the spiritual realm, right? So the case is that's being made is that Luke 2:42 is a synecdoche. And the breaking of bread speaks to the part of something that speaks to the whole. This is a quote. Okay, so when Luke simply mentions the breaking of bread here in Acts, he expects his readers to grasp the fuller meaning those words are learned from his gospel. I missed a word, a synecdoche. So there's part of a sentence that represents the whole sentence because the word of. Here in Acts, he expects the readers to grasp the fuller meaning of those words as learned from his gospel. Breaking bread means eating with Jesus while Jesus serves as the host. So let's talk now about pros and cons. Who says yay? Who says nay? All right? And these are the greater minds that have gone before me for sure. One of them is Burton Kaufman. And this is Burton Kaufman. Everybody know who Burton Kaufman is? Anybody not know who Burton Kaufman is? Okay, thank you. Burton Kaufman is a member of the Church of Christ who he's gone home to his reward now. Very respected man among the Churches of Christ. There's a few names you can list that just automatically, for old timers, so you're not an old timer, but for old timers, Debbie, you're an old timer, because you know who Burton Kaufman is, right? And Jewel Miller, if I say Jewel Miller, all right, there's a few you can just drop names and go, oh yeah, we know who that is. He took it upon himself, the only Church of Christ member I know of ever, to write a commentary on, I said, New Testament. Last time we did this, Randy again corrected me. I need to quit hanging out with Randy. But he wrote a commentary on both New and Old Testament. And no, I mean, nobody. I mean, there's few in the scholarly world that will attempt that. And Burton Kaufman has done that. And so I have a copy of by the way, I went and looked, both New Testament and Old Testament on my shelves in my office. So Randy's right again. I hate it when that happens. It's the only thing's worse is when Jan's right. That's the only thing that's worse. And that's why, right there. You're coming to Devin's defense. So if I want to know what was taught in the auditorium class in the 50s and 60s and probably even the 70s, I go to a Burton Kaufman commentary, and it's about 90%, 99% accurate. That's what was taught. That's how profound an influence Burton Kaufman had. So there you go. That doesn't mean he's without fault. It doesn't mean he's perfect. It doesn't mean he's not human and frail like we are, but highly respected person. So Burton Kaufman quotes Alexander Campbell. Everybody know who Alexander Campbell is? He's the one of the founders of the Restoration Movement. One of the people who said, you know, let's quit trying to fix what's wrong with the Roman Catholic Church and let's just start clean slate, which became the Restoration Movement, which the Churches of Christ are part of the Restoration Movement. So this icon of the 60s and the 70s, Burton Kaufman quotes the founder of the Churches of Christ, or the one who established the restoration pattern, to support his conclusion. And so in regards to the breaking of bread, Acts 2:42, in regard to the breaking of bread, Alexander Campbell wrote, and now you've had time to read that like five times, the expression itself may designate an ordinary meal is in Luke 24:35, breaking bread in people's houses. But that here would be an unmeaning notice. That unmeaning notice is an old-fashioned way of saying pointless. That would be, or does not convey any useful information. The expression itself may designate an ordinary meal, but that doesn't tell us anything new. It would be pointless to do it that way. There can be no doubt that the Eucharist, the communion, is at this period is preceded uniformly by a common repast, a bunch of fancy words, meal. The communion was preceded by, was regularly, uniformly, the pattern was it was preceded by a common meal. That's when the ordinance was instituted. So you remember the Last Supper, Jesus sat down to a meal. And really toward the end of the meal, he said, this bread is my body, this cup is my blood. So what Alexander Campbell is saying, what Burton Kaufman is saying is, that's what's being described here in Acts 2:42. We're still quoting from Alexander Campbell. Most scholars hold that this was the prevailing usage in the first centuries after Christ, and we have traces of that practice in 1 Corinthians 11:20, and in all probability, verse 46. So Bruce, what Alexander Campbell is saying is in all probability that breaking of bread is referring to communion, the meal that goes with it, a meal where Jesus serves as the host. Now, we're going to get a little longer trail going here. Burton Kaufman quotes Alexander Campbell. As Alexander Campbell quotes the scholarly Hackett, I have no idea who the scholarly Hackett is. He was an old guy. saying, this mention of the bread alone is obviously a case in which the leading act of a transaction gives name to the transaction itself. That's a synecdoche. He's just defined a synecdoche. So he's saying this is obviously a synecdoche. I. Howard Marshall, a respected scholar who has written commentaries. Again, he's not perfect. He's not infallible, but he is someone. You got to figure someone who has written commentaries that a publishing house has published. Now, you and I can sit down and write a commentary and self-publish it, and that really doesn't speak. That doesn't give us any real credibility. It just means we have some deeper pockets, but. But to go through a review process and to go through an editorial process and for somebody to decide with all this process, this is worthy of some publishing house investing in it and risking on it, okay? That if somebody has a legit commentary out there, that doesn't mean they're perfect, doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. There's some really goofy commentaries out there. But it says that they're head and shoulders above the norm. I. Howard Marshall believes that the breaking of bread is Luke's term for what Paul calls the Lord's Supper. So there are some examples of those who are saying that this is exactly what it means. When Luke describes, took the bread, blessed the bread, broke the bread, gave the bread, in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus is the host, and that now he comes to Acts and he's using the shorthand version and he's expecting his readers to understand it's a synecdoche. He's shorthand for the rest, for the whole thing. And that same passage, and that same focus on the church in Jerusalem continues to the end of the passage. Acts 2:46. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Now, Acts 2:46, some view this as a reference to common meals. Burton Kaufman says there's no reference to the Lord's Supper here. So Acts 2:42, he says yes. Acts 2:46, he says no. I. Howard Marshall sees it as a common meal. Now, what's interesting, there's others who see Acts 2:46 also as a synecdoche, as a shorthand for the bigger example. Alexander Campbell thought, he said, in all probability, verse 46. So he says verse 42 is definitely shorthand for communion. Verse 46 probably is too.
So I'm just going to say it then. If both use the phrase breaking bread, does that not blow up your hypothesis that you started fighting?
What's that? If both use breaking bread? If both for a common meal and for? Yeah, well, you certainly can't go to it. And there are times where you can see breaking of bread where it's clearly communion. Context gives you that, and we'll look at that here in a little bit. But that certainly does take a ton of weight away from 2:42, because context does not necessarily lead you there. So to answer your question, very much yes, not totally. It doesn't blow it up. But it significantly weakens it. And so then we have to step back and go, okay, we're going to let context rule. And if context makes it clear it's communion, then we're going to go communion. If context doesn't lead us to communion, then we're going to say common meal.
While we're in 46, my translation says day by day,
Day by day, yeah.
Others say every day. I've got two others that say every day. Are we agreeing that this seems to be that they met together and worshiped every day?
They would meet together at... I'm going to say yes, at least in chapter 2.
To
those at home, yes, they did meet together in worship or have some kind of fellowship every day.
And I would kind of put this onto people who are challenged by the idea of a communion at a regular meal. These people weren't in the rhythms that we're in now.
Life had changed radically for them. And what I started to say was, what else do they have to do? They're away from home. They're out of town. They don't have jobs. They may not have taken their family, because the expectation was that the male head of the household at least would be the one who attended at least one of these three festivals each year. And so it could be that you and I went as the head of our households and our families back at home, but we've left our jobs. What else are we going to do? We're going to hang out together. We're going to talk about this amazing thing that we've experienced. Yeah. So you have a brand new upstart faith, and the Messiah's come, but we're going to meet between 10:30 and 11:30 on Sundays and try to work the rest of it out between now and then. Yeah, that doesn't, there's not much system going there, right? Yeah.
The upper room with Jesus.
Wouldn't that be cool? Right.
Could you get together any time in the future after that for a long, long time and have a meal without talking about what the Messiah taught you and how he used the example of the bread and the wine? I mean, to me, I'm concerned that they couldn't have had a common meal without talking.
If bread and wine were staples for meals in their day and time, how difficult would it be to sit down and have bread and wine and not slide into a remembrance of what Christ has done for us, right? It just would seem like a natural thing to do, especially in the heady days of the early days of the church, when there being people added to the church daily. I mean, how hard would it be not to have that, just fall into that at a meal? Yeah, I don't think that's any surprise to the Godhead.
That he took the thing that you need daily to sustain you physically and incorporated something that you might need to sustain you.
All right, brother. leave it to Todd to take us on a tangent. Devin, I'm sorry, not Todd, Devin.
No, it was Todd.
It was Todd.
It's still Devin's fault.
Okay, it's gone. Was it a surprise? Did it, you know? Isn't it amazing that we mere mortals can make an enormous ship like an aircraft carrier that can run for months and years without needing to be refueled? A nuclear aircraft carrier that can run for months and years that never needs to be refueled, and God created us, but we need to be refueled at least once a day. And we've fallen into a pattern of having basically, most people have 2 to 3 full meals a day. Do you think he, 4 or 5, do you think he designed us that way, Devin? Hey, we're going to do something that God could have made us like a nuclear submarine or a nuclear aircraft carrier. And we could go months. There's animals that can do that. We can go months, days, weeks, whatever, without food. But no, he made us where we need to do it every single day, and then took staples in that meal in its time and said, now we're going to give those meaning. So every stinking time you sit down at the table, boom, it's there. Yeah, and to answer your question, I know it's rhetorical, but absolutely not. It was not a surprise. It didn't surprise the Godhead in any way, and it was certainly a pattern in there. Okay. Like I said, I'm going to try to make a case for both sides, and so I'm going to do the best I can and let you decide what you want to do with it. Where do we leave off?
In verse 46,
yes.
There's a reference to being in various private homes and food.
So Acts 2:46, where they broke bread in people's homes, it was private homes and food. Okay, what does that teach us? What does that tell us?
Just
Where did the church meet in those days?
In
private homes. And they had a meal with communion. So I hear what you, if that was in the modern context, that would tell us it was a regular meal, because we come here to do communion. In the first century church, that was a whole different context, because everybody met in the homes, and they always had a meal with their communion. So I'm not sure in that context, I'm not sure how much it tells us. In this context, it would be definitive. Is that okay? Okay.
You're saying they always had a meal with their communion. They weren't involved in what I would call symbolic communion. They always had, where they had...
In the early church, it was always attached to a meal.
But you're not saying wherever they had a meal, it was a communion.
Exactly.
But I was sort of...
You were hinting that way.
Well, I'll be honest with you. In the same way that a newly baptized Christian can't... His zeal can't be tamped down... Right.
Right.
If they hear somebody talk about the struggle they're having, or spiritual or sin difficulty, they're gonna jump on that.
Right.
I suspect that they probably for some time were reliving Jesus.
Almost a spontaneous thing.
Do this in remembrance of me. Yeah. Here's some bread. I'm breaking it and passing it. You know.
Hey, you remember what this means? Yeah.
Yeah. But I just wanted to be clear. In those days, any time there was communion, it was because of a meal. No symbolic.
Every communion had a meal. Not every meal had a communion.
Okay. Just making sure where we're
yeah.
at.
Yeah, all right. let's see. I'm going to press a slide up. Okay, we're all the way down here. Where are we? Alexander Campbell. Okay, here we are. Alexander Campbell also thought this was communion. He said in verse 42 and probably in verse 46, it was probably communion. N.T. Wright, in his book New Testament and the People of God, it was published by Fortress Press back in 1992. N.T. Wright, another respected scholar, not necessarily infallible, but respected. He maintains that the Lord's Supper occupied a place similar to that of Passover in the Jewish community, except that it was celebrated not just once a year, but at least every week, reflecting the regular celebration of Jesus' resurrection on the first day of the week. And John Mark Hicks, who's a current author and I say scholar, and I don't mean to give any kind of sainthood to these people, but they are respected minds in the Christian community, I'll put it that way. John Mark Hicks is very emphatic. He said it is incredulous to think Luke would use the same language, breaking bread, to describe two different things within the space of five verses. So he said it's ridiculous to think he would be talking about in verse 42 communion and verse 46 a regular meal. He said, that's just ridiculous. Luke wouldn't use the same language, and the Holy Spirit wouldn't inspire him to use the same language within a span of five verses to have same language to refer to two different meals. So he says it's incredulous to do that, especially when the Gospel of Luke informs our understanding what it means to break bread. So he's saying, especially when you look back at Luke, and Luke gives us the formula, took, blessed, broke, gave. It's for him to, so he's adamant. So there's the case. You deal with it what you want. But let me say this. We have a very well-established pattern in the 21st century church. We come together on Sunday. We do communion. It's here, Sunday. And we even to the point of if someone is, if we had it Sunday morning, we don't do it Sunday evening. Yeah, maybe somebody else doing it Sunday evening, but if we had it Sunday morning, we don't do it Sunday evening. And we've done it once, and once is enough, and so once is all we do, and so we're done with it. That wasn't evidently the case early in the church. And even Alexander Campbell, he was someone who in his lifetime would take communion several times during the week and saw it as something that was very spiritually nourishing. Was that 5 minutes?
Yeah.
That was 5 minutes on somebody else's clock. So whether or not this is... So you do what you want to with it. We'll close with that. Regardless of whether he's talking about communion or whether he's talking about a common meal, we have, this goes back to Todd's point, we have believers who are worshiping God and taking care of one another. That was often the best meal somebody had, by the way, was the communion meal. Especially the lower echelon in society. Kind of like our fellowship meals. You know, if you're used to cornbread and red beans, you come to a fellowship meal, you're going to eat better than you do most other days.
And if all those were in town, sold their possessions to divide things in common to meet their expenses, the people who came to town with nothing...
That's all they're going to get.
We're getting really well fed.
Yeah.
I mean,
spiritually and physically, right. Yeah.
And by the way, I bring that up to say they were doing things differently than we do them now in a lot of ways.
If we think we're doing communion exactly the way they did in the first century, we're wrong. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that we're doing it wrong. I'm just saying we're not doing it the same.
We've made decisions to compartmentalize and to standardize.
And we'll talk about some of those decisions as we go further down the road. So I leave it with you. I give it to you to do what you want to with it. I tend to fall toward the synecdoche. Like I said, I think it has legs, or I wouldn't waste your time with it. But we'll take it and move on. And if you have some comments or thoughts, please feel free to bring them. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. But Lord willing, next week we will go into the Troas and look at a very fascinating event in Troas in Acts chapter 20. God bless you. Be safe, be warm, and Lord willing, we'll see you Sunday, Wednesday night. We're coming back to Wednesdays again. All right. Wednesday night. God bless. We're dismissed.